Good evening. I would like to welcome you to the exhibition and Congress, The Whole Life, Archives and Imaginaries. This project is reflecting on archives as sites of counter-narratives and illuminates the profound links between archives and society. The Congress and exhibition are dedicated to alternative archival practices in order to analyze archives not only as closed units of authoritarian truth, but also as spaces for collective counter-research with close references to and a huge influence on lived realities. The program of the next days is not only the result of a long-term project, but above all, an insight into a collaborative research process that has taken place over the last 4 years within the framework of the Archive Project. Together with a network of archival institutions and the interdisciplinary community of researchers, methods and practices were developed in order to make archives usable as a resource for reflecting contemporary questions and for future knowledge production. The starting point for the Interdisciplinary Cooperation Project is a network of 4 institutions from different archival contexts. Arsenal, Institute for Film and Video Art with the network Archive außer sich, Pina Bausch Foundation, Staatliche Kunstsammlung Dresden, SKD, and the Haus der Kulturen der Welt, HKW. Each of these institutions is working in exemplary forms to develop new approaches and contextualizations of their holdings. In this partnership, they are testing new strategies for dealing with archives and their archival research and narrative practices. Together, they are developing new methods and theoretical approaches for dealing with archives and rendering them visible. I would like to express my sincere gratitude to the partner institutions that have shared the process with us for their openness and confidence in pursuing alternative paths in this field. On behalf of the Dresden State Art Collections, I would like to mention Marion Ackermann, Marcello Resente, Rudolf Fischer, and Doreen Mende and their teams. We are also very grateful to the collector Egidio Massona for his support and for the insights into the collection, which is now part of SKD and will soon be accessible as the Archive of the Avant-Garde in Dresden. On behalf of the Arsenal and the Archive außer sich network, I would like to thank Stephanie Schulte-Strathaus, who just arrived from Egypt, Markus Ruff, Natalie Knoll, and a large group of partners for their close and intensive collaboration. The program in the Phantom Kino downstairs in the foyer impressively shows the richness of this cooperation. I'm also very grateful to Salomon Bausch, Ismail Dia, Katrin Peters, Sandra Stürning, and Riccardo Viviani from the Pina Bausch Foundation for the intensive exchange on digital collections and immaterial heritage. In the context of the Archive Project, the International Whole Life Academy was established for and with interdisciplinary researchers. It focuses on alternative approaches on archival structures, marginalized or subversive archival practices, and their relation to current social and political developments and discourses. The Academy combines field trips, seminars, archival research, and presentations into a nomadic curriculum that relates theory, practice, and field research in a variety of locations. My special thanks goes to all the contributors to the Whole Life Academy, conveners, and all the participants. This community of researchers, which has emerged here, has been an intense exchange over the past several years, working especially through the pandemic period and despite numerous postponements to develop a curriculum that culminated in the last weeks. The results and further research are partly visible here in the Congress program, in the desktop compilations, but especially in the Whole Life repository, the digital platform of the project. Many thanks for the intensive and enriching work. My thanks goes also to my team and the intendants who developed the archive project and implemented it all over the past years. Stefan Auer, Jessica Pees, Lama El-Khadib, Lena Reuter, Sonja Mattes, Nathalie Ruland, Anja Dunkel, Laura Mattes, Claudia Peters, Nadja Herrmann, Corina Konter, and Jasmine Wenzel. Furthermore, I would like to thank Gernot Ernst, Christina Andersen, Max Negrelli, and the entire exhibition team, as well as Matthias Helfer, Benjamin Pohl, Jan Proest, and the entire technical team who make this show and the Congress possible. This is the first half where I just have to thank all the people who were involved in this project and made it possible. And basically, it's half of the time, which is a document that this is a really collaborative project. The brutal war against the Ukraine is often described as a turn of an era, but it is and will not be an isolated moment in time. Our existing ways of thinking can solve ever fewer of the problems we face. On the contrary, they seem to be accelerating the train we are on as it heads towards the abyss. We are witnessing the worldwide erosion of liberal democracies and a renaissance of militant dictatorships, while at the same time, the climate change we are creating is threatening our very existence on Earth. How did it come to this? One answer to this question can be found in the recent book by David Graeber and David Wengrow, The Dawn of Everything. Graeber and Wengrow criticize the Western view of civilization put forward in the 17th and 18th centuries. This view has forced global society into a lack of viable alternatives, as it conceives the history of civilization as a linear process based on a rational technological worldview. The complex societies allegedly produced by this process ultimately require vertical structures of domination supported by large bureaucracies. The lack of alternatives arises from the fact that Western civilization sees itself as a logical endpoint of this development, and yet is becoming increasingly clear that this endpoint is a dead end, heading straight to disaster. This hegemonic view of civilization was enforced by violence used to justify imperial entitlement and colonial authority. Both people and alternative narratives fell victim to it. Archives played a key role in producing this history of civilization. They possess the power of representation with which certain narratives can be imposed by force. They decide what is important and thus what is collected as well as what is excluded from the collection process. Classification systems control access to the archival objects and thus the perspectives from which they are perceived. In this sense, archives are conservative places that serve to maintain the power of the hegemonic system. But archives are two-faced. They can also become places of revolution, and this has to do with the materiality of the objects that are gathered in them. There is a resistance in this materiality. Each material object possesses a multiplicity of properties that lie far beyond the control of traditional classification systems and thus open a multitude of semantic possibilities. These need to be activated through imagination to make new patterns of thought and action visible by reconfiguring existing relationship patterns. In doing so, existing classification systems can be not only undermined, but can be replaced by new approaches. The Whole Life Archives and Imaginaries has set out to develop such new activation strategies. It is essential to include the perspectives of those who have been systematically excluded from this process, but also to question the logics and mechanisms of archiving itself. The artistic contributions to the project enable us to navigate this method. For example, in her work, Tribunals, She, Mangrove Archives, Natalie Anguissimo Mba Bikoro reappraises processes of colonial and racist crimes, adding voices to them that were systematically suppressed. The presentation of fictional cases allows her to revise real cases, a revision that enables rereading of history. She thus opens up new perspectives on the mechanisms of colonial apparatus that continues to have a profound effect today. Bini Adamczyk's Archive of Social Movements on the Move deals with the Pincus Archive, one of the world's largest archives for the history of international emancipation movements. Her work reveals that archives are techniques that fundamentally change the objects they seek to preserve. What happens to a revolt that is not yet over when it is archived and thus frozen and packaged in a classification system? How can its revolutionary potential be reactivated? How can work on archives be combined with an interest in promoting social change and not congeal in a lack of alternatives? In their work, Stodelat invoked the image of the canary in a coal mine. When its song was silenced, it was a signal to leave the mine immediately to escape the poisonous gas. Through this image, they reflect their role as artists in Russia before and after the invasion of the Putin regime in the Ukraine. In the constant struggle against the regime, the ability to read the archives and receive its signals got lost. It seems we all long ignored the silence. These are just three examples of the manifold works presented in the project. I would like to thank all the artists of the exhibition and all contributors of the program of the Congress for the intense collaboration and the extremely enriching exchange. I now wish you many inspiring moments in the coming days and hand over the microphone to Megan Höttger, who has conceived the opening evening and thus the first of the 8 micro stories here in the auditorium. Megan Höttger is a historian and curator, and she participated in the Whole Life Academy from the beginning in 2019. She holds a PhD in performance studies from the University of California, Berkeley, and since 2019 is a curator with the Amsterdam-based arts organization, If I Can't Dance, I Don't Want to Be Part of Your Revolution. Höttger's archival work and collaborative research practices map the political economies of the Cold War and transnational underground media networks of that time. Megan, please.
Corona times, I just moved the stuff. Okay. So thank you, Baron, and welcome everyone to Active Archives, Performing Social Realities in Archival Contexts. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. I'd like to start actually, as did Baron, by offering, first of all, my gratitude to all the members of the Hakave team that made this evening's program possible. And I also want to extend my deep appreciation to all of this evening's contributors, including Anik, Grant, Frederic, Diana, Nando, Salim, Lina, Salis, KG, Helena, and Paula. Many thanks to all of you for being co-conspirators with me tonight and for sharing your performance and performative entry points into archive work and the contested social realities such work has the potential to recall, reframe, reproach, rewrite, reconfigure, and reattune. With you and with your practices, I hope we can open up some possible lines of thinking about how to do things with archives for the weekend to come. My evocation of the Austinian Speech Act here is not a rhetorical move. On the contrary, I come to it with the form of the manifesto in mind, which, as theater scholar Martin Pushner articulated in his 2005 Poetry of the Revolution, is a demand for a world that at once is yet to come and that is already existing through the very utterance of the demand itself. The performative speech act in the manifesto form, then, is a prefigurative one, and it is this space of prefiguration, that each of tonight's presentations imagines into. Along the way, each also imagines with and through expanded modalities of transmission and inscription that simultaneously inhabit and exceed the material remains most often associated with the archive. With the wars, plural, raging outside and within, these kinds of prefigurative spaces and expanded modalities are as urgent as ever. In the spirit of expanded inscription, I would actually like to pause with my own words for a moment and read for you Dagmar Schultz's preface to the 2019 book, Audre Lorde, Dream of Europe. Quote, Audre Lorde's role as an academic at a German university is even less known in the United States, but her contacts with Black Germans and with white German women took place in her seminars at the Free University of Berlin during the summer of 1984. I am glad that I made audio recordings of her courses, as well as readings, discussions, and interviews. When I received the Margarita von Brentano Award offered for furthering the situation of women in academia, my idea to establish an Audre Lorde archive at the Free University in Berlin could be realized with part of the prize. The audio recordings of her courses were integrated into the archive material. The archive has been used frequently by a number of people. Ginger Hintz was the first person to engage with the courses by transcribing parts of them, which are now available as parts of the archive. It is, however, the merit of Myra A. Rodriguez Castro to have completely transcribed two of the courses, an arduous task, and to make the material available for a larger public beyond the archive. Rarely do we have the opportunity to participate in classroom teachings and interactions between a teacher and her students. With this book, Myra makes it possible for readers to experience Audre Lorde as a teacher in a very specific and unusual situation, as a guest professor at a university in Berlin. This work and our collaboration I call archival activism. Thank you, Myra. Dr. Dagmar Schultz, October 19, 2019, St. Croix, U.S. Virgin Islands. So around the time that the vision for this active archives program was first emerging, I was also finally getting around to reading Audre Lorde, Dream of Europe. Schultz's preface struck me deeply as I reflected on my conversations with the HKV team. This notion of archival activism was precisely the question that we were discussing and gently debating. What could or does this look like, sound like, move like, feel like? And what is the relationship between activism and activation? Those of us working in institutions, and probably many of us who don't, are quite familiar with the expression, which has become almost emptied out of meaning in its overuse and instrumentalization. But how would it mean if activation was reclaimed as a critical site for embodied archival research, as in Paolo Montesino Saliva's Revolve? What would it mean to unsettle the very notion of activation by shifting into the question of what is produced out of the archive, as in Linus Gratza and Elise Pielu's Voices and Bodies in the Center? To work into the entanglements of activist lives and their activations through the interview form, as in Grant Watson's How We Behave, an Archive of Radical Practice. To work in the collisions of the two, as with Salim Bayari's Hadra Collider in his Congress speech. What does it really look like, sound like, move like, feel like to linger in the active that bridges activism and activation? With time and through conversation with tonight's contributors, I came to refigure this or reconfigure this set of questions, or rather to expand it into a twofold set of ongoing negotiations. If on one side is this bridging force of the active, then on the other side is the question of access, both in terms of making public, as in providing accessibility to archival materials, and in terms of making publics, as in moving bodies together in collective formations vis-a-vis archival materials. Making public, making publics. What are our rights to archives, to remembering, to radical traces that inhabit and exceed? Tonight, our four presentations experiment with how storytelling can happen otherwise, and in the process, rehearse gestures of enfranchisement across archival contexts, both temporal and geopolitical. I specifically take up the word enfranchisement here and not belonging, not to move toward an electoral notion of rights by any means, but to signal the material political frames within which belonging as a relational exchange in the world finds its conditions of possibility. In the archival context we will encounter tonight, these political frames from the passport to the protest are active. Here, of course, voice is critical. At the foundation of enfranchisement is the ability to speak in whatever form, linguistic, bodily, or somewhere in between that might take. And so across the presentations, something to keep in mind is how voice finds its form, be it through the dialogic, the translation or mistranslation, the audio registration, or the soundscape. So with these sets of questions or propositions on the table, I sort of wrap up, and I'd like to first, though, give a quick lay of the land and give you a little bit of an insight into each of the presentations and the connections between them. I'll be back up throughout the night to give more details on each, but for now, I just want to give you a sketch. The first performative intervention, which I'll introduce more in just a moment, will be Grant Watson and Anique Fournier's How We Behave in Archive of Radical Practice. After this, we will have a very short stage change. Please don't leave your seats during that. Before we move into Salim Bayeri's performance, Conger's speech from a crumbly speech from a time we don't relate to anymore. If with How We Behave, Grant and his collaborators work through a script reading from what he calls an archive of radical practice, experimenting, not unlike Schultz and Rodriguez Castro, with communicability, transcription, and the sharing of situated life stories, then in Salim Bayeri's Congress speech, he playfully calls into question the terms of communicability itself, turning its attention to the history of the Hakave's site, an ideological function. His performance hacks the translation booth, and with it, the modernist imperial dream of liberal democratic internationalism. Here, non-operational modernities, a term I borrow from Linus Gratte, becomes palpable, as they do in Elise Pialou and Linus's voices and bodies in the center, recording back and forth, which takes up the Centre Pompidou's scattered and fragmentary audio archives. Taking us into the spatialized, if not also peripheral, sounds of elements like the housekeeping rules at the beginning of a live program or the applause at the end, they prompt us to sensitize our ears and extend the frame for what constitutes the encounter in the space of performance. And finally, after one last small stage change, again, please don't leave your seats, Paula Montesino Saliva's Revolve closes tonight's program with a voyage into the sonic field of the 2019 Chilean uprising. Her performance is an invitation, provocation to listen through the noise, not only with our ears, but with our whole bodies, where I would propose a whole life begins.